As you know, I'm a connoisseur of your diaries. You haven't
in all good bookshops, apart from the one in the conference centre.
Is it? You're kidding
bloody
me.
Bloody Blackwell's, honestly.
Unbelievable. what an insult. Now, you aren't a great fan of Ed Ball's throughout the diaries. I mean, you admire him in some ways, but you're quite critical of him. How do you think he's changed as a politician since the last election?
I mean, the truth is that Ed and I would have, when we had our run-ins, which we did, it tended to be because of the, you know, what we call in the diaries the TBGBs. Mm. It was when Tony and Gordon would be going through, you know, rocky difficulties. And sometimes, as I make clear in the diaries, I felt that Ed was pushing that Gordon's agenda in a way that made that worse at times. Now, when you say how has he changed, I mean, I think it is... I'm obviously in a very different position because, unlike him, I'm not an elected MP. But I've sensed in my own life that once you sort of, in a sense, become your own person, you can be the same but also different. And I sense with Ed that he's the same person in lots of different ways, but he's there in his own right as an elected MP, very senior position in the Labour Party, and I get a sense that he's if you like, more comfortable in his own skin, and that he's. I thought what was interesting about today was it. I thought he looked confident, sounded confident. I mean, we all know he's had this, you know, history of a stammer and the rest of it, and you saw it a couple of times.
Yeah.
But actually, he was confident in the arguments. He's taken a fair bit of a battering from the Tories, and they obviously decided at one point they felt he was a weak link. And they've tried to sort of, you know, knock him over. And I think what you saw today is he's stood up to that well, and he's still pushing out big arguments, and that's what, in the end, politics is about.
What a lot of journalists are trying to do is put a wedge between him and Ed Miliband. Do you see any truth in that? Is there any sort of history repeating itself with the battles between Tony Blair and Gordon Brown now with the two Eds?
I think there's history repeating itself in that the media always want to have that as a sort of, you know, since Thatcher Lawson, Thatcher Howe, Major Lamont, right through Tony Gordon and the John Smith, Neil Kinnock. That sense of attention is, I think, just one of those stories the media always want to write. And I think that both Ed Balls and Ed Miliband, they hopefully learnt enough during the period that we were talking about and set out in my diaries to know that if I've just done this event, a legacy tribute event, Philip Gould and... the new book that's come out about his contribution to the Labour Party. And I made the point that I felt that when we were all together, all the sort of top strategy people all together, I said, you really felt like you were in Barcelona and you were playing Hartlepool. That's how we felt. And when we didn't feel like that was when those divisions were coming in. So they, hopefully everybody in the Labour Party has learned the lessons from that. And understands that, particularly in opposition, you've got to be a team. You've got to work together all the time.
I think you were on the platform with Peter Mandelson at that event. You and he have had some fairly harsh things to say about each other since the election, since both of your books have come out. Have you kissed and made up metaphorically?
Yeah, because ultimately, as you know, I think we were both making the point in there that politics is about argument, and we had differences of opinion sometimes, and sometimes they were exacerbated, if you like, by differences in personality as well. But I would, you know, say Peter is a good friend, and despite those ups and downs, and sometimes friendships are deeper and more enduring because you've been through the ups and downs. So, yeah, and it was a really good event. You know, we had several hundred people there, and it was interesting how I noticed the loudest applause I got were for the points where I was defending our record. And I think that's something else we have to learn about as well, is that, you know, the Tories, when they never, ever stopped defending their own record, even when they're in the opposition. They never stopped attacking us over the winter of discontent and all the rest of it. A lot of first-time voters wouldn't even know when it was or what it was, but they're aware of it because you, in politics and campaigning, you're always looking to the future. You're always talking about new ideas and new policy. But in terms of the big arguments, they're often about the past.
Looking to the future, Ed Miliband is in a very different place now to where he was this time last year. Nobody's talking about leadership coups, nothing like that at all. And what has he got to do over the next 12 months? I mean, if we're in, what was it, Brighton next year, and we're talking, what do you think he will have needed to achieve over the next 12 months?
I think that if I look back to when he became leader, he wasn't expected to become leader. Most of the party, most members didn't vote for him, most MPs didn't vote for him. Most of the media was predicting that he wouldn't win, and he did win. And then I think that created a very, very difficult starting point. What he had to show in the initial period was that he was up for seeing off any difficulties from that. I've been really impressed by his kind of calm, the resilience that he's shown when people have been taking shots at him. I think what he has to do between now and the next year is to show that, having, as I said earlier, relearnt the arts of opposition, that now we move into the phase where Labour present themselves as an alternative government. I think it's not just about Ed. I think the Shadow Cabinet does actually have to up its profile and, in a sense, up its game in relation of taking the Tories to task, but also in putting forward the policy agenda. Now, I don't think you should rush on that, because the fact is that there are only certain points when an opposition will really be listened to by the public. And the policy agenda has to evolve and develop. And what today and tomorrow are about is signalling the direction. And by next year, I think there's got to be a clearer sense of what the policies are. And then by the year after that, there's got to be the beginnings of a manifesto. And then I think for himself personally, he's got to become, in relation to a relationship with the public, if you like, there's got to be a deepening of that relationship, so that people know a bit more about him, see more of him. And, you know, here we are in the media centre. A lot of it is difficult because of the fact that, you know, with the coalition, we're the third most interesting party. Mm. You know, you guys are far more interested in talking about the Tories because they're the main part of the government, and the Lib Dems because they're the other part of the government, and Labour's the opposition. So we've gone from a kind of generation where we were the most interesting people and the ones that the media and public wanted to focus on to being the third most. And I think he's got to come at that from the mindset of saying the only way to get into that debate is actually about what you say, how you say it, and how you build the arguments for the next election.
What about David Miliband? Hasn't he got to choose between accepting a shadow cabinet position or leaving Parliament? Because otherwise he's just going to be a constant distraction, a bit of a sideshow, gives the media a lot of opportunities to talk about anything other than the future.
But I think, look, David's an MP. He's a very talented guy. He can make contribution in lots of different ways. I don't think it is that much of a distraction. It may be a story from time to time, but I don't think people are sitting at home tonight in Manchester watching the news, or, you know, around estates around the country. They're not. I don't think they might be saying, you know, oh, that's the guy who fought against his brother, and there's a bit of that. But when it comes to the next election, I do hope that David is still in frontline politics, and I do hope that he's still around the place, because I think he'll have a huge amount to give.
So just finally, watching you go around this conference, you seem to me to have rediscovered your appetite for politics. Any chance of you standing at the next election?
You ask me that every time I see
you. I know, because I want you to say yes.
Yeah, no, well, when I do, I'll give you a call. If I do. If I do, I'll give you a call. I was getting press ganged last night by a party up here that should be nameless. I've told you why before, why I've always thought about it, then not thought about it.
But I don't know. I just think, don't you feel that you want to do something? I mean, you've probably got quite a nice life at the moment, doing lots of different things, all of which are quite interesting. Have you not sort of got the thirst to do sort of another big thing?
I have, and... But what I realise, what I find in my life now is it's a trade-off between, if you like, duty, which has always been quite a big part of me, and freedom, which I've never had before.
Yeah.
And, I mean, for example, I did an event in the Royal Exchange Theatre the other night about addiction and mental illness, and, I mean, I do a lot of things on that now. And congratulations, by the way, for all the nominations you've had
Thank
for the
you
Media
very much
Awards.
Indeed.
But I sort of think, well, of course, you could do, maybe I could do more of that if I was in frontline politics, as it were. But on the other hand, I think it's partly because I can go off and make money doing ABC and then spend a week doing that for a charity, whatever it might be. That freedom, I'd be hard-pressed to give it up. All I will say to you is a lot of people ask me, particularly when I'm up here, and I do think about it, and I am thinking about it, and... I don't think there's a fantastic rush. We sort of know when the next election is going
to
be.
I think what you need to do is persuade Fiona to do it too, and then
both do it.
Yeah,
in neighbouring constituencies.
There's a precedent.
Become the new Ed and Yvette.
Absolutely. And talking of Ed Balls, he played the piano for us. Now,
yeah.
I know you're a bagpipe player, which is kind of a bit like playing the piano.
It's not at all like the bagpipes.
But I'm sure you can tinkle the ivories for us now for a couple of seconds, can't
you? Well, I can't play the piano.
Go on, right. Have a go then.
But I can play the bagpipes by ear.
Play the. It's a bit like me speaking German.
I will try to play Scott and the Brave. But will you please tell your listeners, I don't play the piano, right? I'm not like Ed Balls. I don't play the piano.
And now, here to entertain our listeners is Alistair Campbell.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Is it that one?
It's not. Is it switched on?
No, I can't. Hold on. No.
I think we can safely say Ed Balls was better.
That was a bagpipe tune on the piano, John.